we're all faced with a $3.5 billion deficit, and we have to deal with that.
Lawmakers gather into the 29th legislative session. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, January 20th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski picks up another chairmanship.
This is a level of oversight that is somewhat unprecedented.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
The state legislature began the 29th session this afternoon. House Speaker Mike Chenault gaveled in at 1 p.m.
Will the House please come to order?
The state Senate followed an hour later. Senate President Kevin Meyer is a Republican from Anchorage. He says the caucus has several priorities this year: the gas line, education, Arctic policy and development, and federal overreach. But he says the state budget will, of course, need the most attention.
We're all faced with a $3.5 billion deficit, and we have to deal with that. And what our first priority and goal is to try to chip away at it. We obviously can't do it all in one year, nor are we even going to attempt. But what we'd like to try to do is try to whittle it down over, you know, a 3 to 5 year period. Looking at maybe 20% this year. Again, not a firm goal at 20%, but that's just kind of a target. And even if we're able to do that, that's still a substantial amount, somewhere about $600-700 million.
A report released by the Legislative Finance Division laid out that from both mathematical and practical perspectives, it's virtually impossible to cut our way to a balanced budget. Should other revenue sources, an income tax, a sales tax, or taxes on fishing and mining be on the table?
I don't think at this time, no. All of those industries you're talking about are working on pretty tight margins right now. I mean, those are the areas, too, that are providing the jobs currently. So I think that would probably be the last place that I would look for additional revenue. As far as any new taxes and permanent fund earnings, again, I think you want to stay focused on the spending side and get the spending in order first, and then see where we're at and keep the public in the picture. And I think they're going to say, hey, you know, you've cut enough, and so why don't you start looking at this and this or that? And that's what we want to do. We want to get the public involved. Right now, the public is not saying, hey, we want an income tax or we want a sales tax and we don't want you to cut this or that. We're not hearing from them yet because we haven't done our job, which is made the reductions that are necessary.
Governor Walker has said he wants to see a paradigm shift with how Alaska treats its oil and gas, and he's been critical of state officials entering confidentiality agreements with private partners on a North Slope gas project. Do you think he's taking the right approach?
Well, you know, that's a tough one because, you know, when you're working with the private sector, it's a very competitive area, and they really don't want their competitors to know what that their economics are for various projects. So if the state is truly going to be partners with the private sector, I think a certain amount of confidentiality is absolutely necessary. I am encouraged. I think he has said that Marty Rutherford will do the confidentiality. But then, you know, I'm concerned that then she can't talk to her boss, the governor. So I'm not sure how that's going to work yet for them. And certainly we all want to be as open and as transparent as we possibly can, but there just are sometimes some circumstances where, you know, especially in this case where you're working with the private sector and where you're asking the private sector to invest up to $65 billion, that you're just going to have to keep things confidential.
And my last question would be, Governor Walker has said that one of his top priorities is expanding Medicaid. How receptive is your caucus to that idea?
Well, you know, I think we're willing to listen to it and to see if that's if that is possible, if that is doable, and if it can be done without costing the state more money. I mean, we're not looking for ways, obviously, to increase our budget in any way. And you know, I've heard different numbers that even with 100% federal match, which we know is going to go away in a couple of years, it's still going to cost the state several million just to expand our computer system and to add more folks. But then I've also heard too that that there may be a way to do all of this without costing the state more money. So we're willing to look at if there is such a way to do this without adding more cost to the state, and if so, we'll certainly going to look at it.
Senate President Kevin Meyer is a Republican from Anchorage. Governor Bill Walker has decided to keep two acting commissioners and appoint one new one. The newest face is Chris Laddick, who will direct the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Laddick has served as Unalaska's city manager since 2001. Before that, he worked in Dillingham and Galena. The governor will also submit Sam Cotton's name to the legislature for confirmation as head of the Department of Fish and Game. Cotton served in the Alaska State Legislature as a Democrat for 16 years. Walker also intends to keep Acting Corrections Commissioner Ron Taylor in the position on a permanent basis. Taylor was previously a deputy commissioner in the department and focused on prisoners' re-entry to society. Walker's cabinet appointments must be confirmed by the legislature. The Senate Finance Committee is considering hiring two former state commissioners to help lawmakers review state spending and address massive budget deficits. The committee's co-chairs have proposed contracts with former Revenue Commissioner Angela Rodell and former Health Commissioner Bill Struer. The committee is expected to consider the proposals later this week. Co-chair Anna McKinnon, a Republican from Eagle River, says she and co-chair Republican Pete Kelly of Fairbanks spoke with Governor Bill Walker and told him they are just looking for the best advice on issues that are major cost drivers, such as Medicaid and debt service.
I want to be absolutely respectful. The governor absolutely should have a team that he wants at his side to implement his policies and his strategies. But having someone that's been in the trenches, I think will be helpful for Alaskans.
Rodell and Struer served under the previous governor, Sean Parnell. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, helping people with disabilities learn to ski in Juneau.
Everyone comes in with a different life story, a different disability, so it's fun for us to kind of problem solve all the time.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Enroll now in the Health Insurance Marketplace. Sign up at healthcare.gov. Open enrollment ends February 15th. Depending on your income, age, and family size, you may be eligible for discounts that may lower your monthly cost and out-of-pocket expenses. Pick a plan that is right for you and your family. Call 211 for free individual assistance about the Health Insurance Marketplace. Visit GetCoveredAlaska.org for more information. This message sponsored by Ashna, a partner of Get Covered Alaska.
President Obama's State of the Union address to Congress was tonight, but the White House has been offering previews of his main proposals for weeks. Alaska's new Republican Senator Dan Sullivan said before it began, he was expecting to hear an overly rosy depiction of unemployment.
The vast majority of that decrease in unemployment has been Americans dropping out of the workforce. The labor rate participation is at its lowest rate in over 30 years, so to me, that's not progress.
Obama is also proposing tax reform. He wants a tax credit for middle-class families. The president also wants to increase the tax on capital gains, which are now taxed at a lower rate than regular income for wealthy Americans. Sullivan says it's not good policy.
You know, when you raise a capital gains tax, you're inhibiting investment, and I don't think that's what this country needs right now.
Democrats who support the proposal say it would affect very few taxpayers since the vast majority have no capital gains and fewer still have incomes higher than $465,000 per year, the threshold for triggering the increase. Sullivan is also skeptical of Obama's proposal for free tuition at community colleges. Senator Lisa Murkowski already chairs a full committee, the Energy and Natural Resources Committee. But today, she was also named chairman of the Interior Subcommittee of the Appropriations Panel. That subcommittee essentially sets the budget for the Interior Department, as well as the Forest Service and the Indian Health Service. Murkowski says it means she'll lead the panel that writes the laws related to resource agencies, review their work, and hold their purse strings.
This is a level of oversight, a level of control, and a level of authority that is somewhat unprecedented.
The Interior Department includes agencies that are hugely important in Alaska, from the Park Service and the BLM to the Bureau of Indian Affairs and BOEM, which manages offshore energy resources. Vanderbilt political science professor Bruce Oppenheimer has researched Senate process and its impact on energy policy. He says the subcommittee assignment on appropriations adds a great deal to Murkowski's power as chairman of Energy and Natural Resources.
That's double barrels. I mean, you know, that's probably almost as important.
Oppenheimer says the budget control gives Murkowski leverage over administration appointees who run the subdivisions of Interior.
That puts the chair in a very useful position, because there's every reason that people in the Interior Department want to stay on the good side of the chair of that subcommittee.
Murkowski, in a written statement, listed several priorities she intends to pursue on the Appropriations Subcommittee. They include contract support funding for Indian Health, cleaning abandoned wells, and removing EPA authority for certain air quality permits. Fairbanks Democratic State Representative Scott Kawasaki has pre-filed a bill that would set up a system for compensating people wrongly convicted of crimes. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the issue is of particular interest in Fairbanks.
Wrongful conviction is a hot topic in Fairbanks as a decision is pending on key evidence in a long-contested murder case. The Fairbanks 4 case involves four local men convicted of the 1997 beating death of Fairbanks teenager John Hartman. The four maintain they didn't do it, and the Alaska Innocence Project is working the case, seeking the release of incriminating statements made by a Fairbanks man convicted of an unrelated murder to his attorney about the Hartman killing. State Representative Scott Kawasaki says his bill, which would provide up to $2 million to an exonerated individual, is not just about the Fairbanks 4.
The Fairbanks 4 is a very sensational issue in Fairbanks, but the facts are out there that there were over a record number of exonerations last year in the United States. And of course, there's no way to turn back the time, but in a small way, I think compensation for those who have been wrongfully convicted, this is a way to help heal.
Kawasaki says the legislation is modeled after compensation programs in other states.
We worked closely with the Alaska Innocence Project and with Innocence Project groups across the U.S. that have introduced legislation like this. I think currently half of the states have some sort of compensation statutes in place.
Representative Kawasaki submitted a similar wrongful conviction compensation bill late last session that did not move, but says the reception was generally favorable, and he's working with the Judiciary Committee to address issues, including a provision that would prevent a wrongfully convicted individual who accepts compensation from suing the state. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska has a kink community made up of people living alternative lifestyles that range from discomfort with mainstream society to unconventional sex practices. But they've struggled to find a place to gather. Now, after the group has weathered a lengthy tenant dispute and thousands of dollars worth of property damage, the Alaska Center for Alternative Lifestyles, or ACAL, is ready to open its doors in Anchorage. KSKA's Zachariah Hughes reports.
Sarah Shawbach shows off the staircase leading into the 2,000-square-foot basement she rents in downtown Anchorage, formerly the Kodiak Bar.
Our stairwell, when we finish staging, will be full of pride flags from across the lower 48, and those will include bear pride flags and GBLT pride flags.
ACAL is meant to solve a years-long problem of where people interested in unconventional sex can gather for events.
We've rented entire floors of hotels and done theme rooms. We've rented basements. We've rented empty houses. And we've been doing it with the respect of the greater community, I believe, in Anchorage. We haven't had anyone call the cops and say, oh my God, the perverts are screaming next door.
Kink community is the umbrella term covering everything from bondage and leather aficionados to erotic artists and exotic hula hoopers. Though Alaska's kink community is dwarfed by cities in the lower 48, it's far more widespread than the uninitiated may realize. In the last two decades, different groups organized coffee meetups and dinners, nicknamed munches. Shawbuck joined 8 years ago and started putting together events.
It was just amazing to realize that people across the board, young, old, fat, ugly, educated, not, your doctors, your lawyers, your school teachers, your single mothers, your college students, everybody shows up to those munches. If you saw us sitting at a restaurant, 20, 25, 30, 40 of us, you would have no clue that we are Alaska's alternative community. We look like the people you'd see at Fred Meyer's.
Shawbuck pounced on the opportunity to rent out the basement in the old Kodiak, even though it meant cleaning up years of broken furniture, trash, and remnants of people crashing when they had nowhere else to go. Upon seeing the space for the first time in 2 years, the landlord wept. Shawbuck and volunteers organized work frolics, a borrowed Amish term, to haul out trash, paint, clean, and disinfect the industrial kitchen on the top floor. It took months, but the results are impressive. The rambling chambers of the basement are primed for activities. A tiny stage surrounded by tables, studded leather straps to hang donated art, and so-called playrooms holding a few daunting apparatuses.
And there'll also be a large padded table here that also has a cage that goes underneath it.
Forgive me if this is a little bit suburban, but what is the table and what are the cage for?
There's so many options for a table and a cage.
Sorry if that was a dumb question.
No, it's not a dumb question at all.
Alaska's kink community numbers in the hundreds and is committed enough that Shawbuck can finance the costs of rent and upkeep by collecting membership fees.
It's like having a Sam's Club card. You don't get the groceries for free, but you definitely get a discounted rate for being a member.
$120 a year buys access to the space, along with priority rates for workshops and educational events on eclectic topics like knot tying. ACAL was set to open in December, but a high-profile tenant dispute disrupted those plans. The top floor was leased to Charlene Egby, who runs the Alaska Cannabis Club and was evicted last week. By the time Egby and her business partners vacated the premise, the top floor was a mess. The kitchen was filled with trash, and flat-screen TVs, fixtures, and furniture were gone. Egby says that she and others poured money and time into improving the space after they signed the lease.
We're disappointed that our former landlord continues to attempt to assassinate the character of the Alaska Cannabis Club. We are taking legal action against our former landlord and other parties involved for defamation of character, amongst other things.
Shawbuck is not eager to dwell on what happened or the pending civil suit. Instead, she's planning more work frolics to get the ACAL space ready for the weeks ahead. She knows where she'll put a small library and has already picked out a name for the modest boutique that'll sell leather accoutrements. Mostly, she's ready for the Alaska Center for Alternative Lifestyles to finally become a gathering place.
We just need a home. We need a place that's safe, sane, secure, that we can practice what it is that we do.
The center's public premiere is slated for the first Friday in February. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The Federal Subsistence Board meeting is Wednesday, January 21st through Friday, January 23rd, 2015 at the Dena'ina Civic and Convention Center in Anchorage. The meeting is open to the public either in person or by teleconference. Public comments and input on the proposed changes to federal subsistence fish and shellfish regulations is being sought, along with specific fisheries proposals. Meeting materials found at regulations.gov. This message sponsored by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Governor Walker has put the demolition of an Anchorage property on hold. Walker told reporters yesterday that he was halting further action on the demolition of a building that houses a Subway sandwich shop in the city's Government Hill neighborhood because the demolition is part of the Kinnick Arm Bridge project.
We have not made a final determination on that project yet, and so it seemed to be a bit aggressive and sort of out of sync a bit. We said, you know, we're not canceled projects, but we said we're going to stand down these projects and look at them individually, and we're going to go forward. So it seemed like in the middle of that process to be, you know, taking out a business on Government Hill, it just seemed like we were getting ahead of ourselves a bit. And so that's why I asked them to stand down on that.
In late December, Walker named the Kinnickarm Bridge as one of a half dozen mega projects that he's putting on hold due to the state's current fiscal climate. Bob French, a Government Hill resident who speaks for a group opposed to the bridge, says the governor's action highlights the fact that the State Department of Transportation has its own agenda.
Evidently, DOT likes to do things their way, and they were charging ahead with acquiring or shutting down businesses and starting to go ahead with the demolition that I believe they're still planning on doing demolition on a couple of houses. So we're hoping that the governor will hold to his statement of saying, let's not go and start tearing down buildings and closing businesses. So hopefully we could get some of that money back that hasn't been spent yet.
DOT spokeswoman Shannon McCarthy says that a DOT contractor, HDR, contacted the subway business asking to acquire the business's lease. She says now that acquisition is on hold. Two houses and an old motel in the area had been slated for demolition by DOT last year. McCarthy says the demolition contract is now on hold and under review by the state. South Central Alaska's lack of snow and uncertain weather is again pushing organizers of the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race to ponder moving the start of the race from Willow to Fairbanks. A ceremonial start for the 1,000-mile race is scheduled for March 7th in Anchorage. The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports that in 2003, the Iditarod Trail Committee started the race in Fairbanks north of the Alaska Range because of poor snow. Race Marshal Mark Nordman says one big storm could improve trail conditions, but starting the race in Fairbanks is an option. Juneau's Eagle Crest Ski Area is halting lift operations until it receives enough snow to open at least part of the upper mountain. Director of Sales and Marketing Jeffra Clough says it was not an easy decision, but so far there's not enough snow in Juneau, but she says the season isn't over yet.
For the past several years, she's been great and given us a lot of snow, and this year, unfortunately, she's just slow to giving us that snow, but we feel certain that there's still a lot of winter to go.
Clough says Eagle Crest will look at ways to add skiing opportunities should the snow arrive this year.
This isn't the first time this has happened. It's just unfortunate the first time in recent years that it's happened. So we're looking at, you know, being open on Friday nights, possibly extending our hours in the springtime, closing 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the evening on weekends and holidays.
The city-owned ski area has a long-established no-refunds policy for season pass holders. Fortunately, Clough says, they've rarely had to use it. For now, the mountain will be staffed by a skeleton crew. The latest conditions on the mountain can be found at skijuneau.com. Earlier this month, Juneau did get some snow, and Eagle Crest had its smallest chairlift going. This allowed Orca to run its adaptive ski and snowboard program, which has been teaching people with disabilities how to ski for 18 years. KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
When Jessica Gilbert skis, she wears a harness that gets clipped to the chairlift, a precaution in case she has a seizure. The job of securing Gilbert is usually one for her ski partner, an Orca staff member or volunteer. On this day, the 30-year-old is practicing how to do it herself. Gilbert is autistic. She's been skiing with Orca for 15 years and continues to push herself to learn new skills.
I felt like I wanted to do it for independence.
Orca team leader Lindsay Halvik says helping Gilbert with the harness was just part of the routine, but Gilbert wanted to own her ski experience.
She asked us last year, actually, hey, is there a way that I could do this by myself? And we actually were unsure at the time.
Halvik says after talking with Eagle Crest Ski Patrol and other ski areas down south, Orca came up with a system and felt comfortable allowing Gilbert to do it herself.
Once you kind of go through the research, go through all the investigation, and we practice it ourselves, then I know it's all set up ready to go for her.
Brainstorming solutions for how to make skiing enjoyable for everyone is part of what Halvik loves about her job. Orca works with a wide range of clients, people with Down syndrome, autism, people who've lost a limb or have spinal cord injuries. Ages have ranged from 4 to 82.
everyone comes in with a different life story, a different disability. So it's fun for us to kind of problem solve all the time, you know, like this didn't work, but that's going to work. Maybe next time we could try this and this will make them even more successful.
ORCA stands for Outdoor Recreation and Community Access and is part of the organization Southeast Alaska Independent Living. Its adaptive ski and snowboard program relies on volunteers who go through training. This season, there are 40. Halvik says having patience is key.
We don't have a formula for working with people with disabilities. It's never going to be the same lesson, even with the same person. It's a different day, different conditions. They're in a different space. And so we just really advocate, do some investigation, you know, like, how are you feeling this morning? You know, where are you at? And you can meet them there.
On this day, Gilbert is having a great time.
My best run was when I had my hands up like I was driving a car and I was making turns really fast.
She says that helps her balance. Besides adaptive skiing, Gilbert participates in other ORCA programs as well.
I do kayaking, snowshoeing, biking, hiking, different activities like that.
If it wasn't for ORCA, Gilbert says her life would be drastically different. She'd likely spend more time at home, surrounded by caregivers and family. At ORCA programs, Gilbert is with friends.
It's really good for me because I can get out and socialize.
And that's really the point. Program director Tristan Knutson-Lombardo says ORCA tries to dismantle the barriers people with disabilities face.
So I think it's empowering. I think it's also just fun. It doesn't have to be all work and serious. It's just fun to get out.
After Gilbert and Knutson-Lombardo get off the chairlift, they decide which way they'll go and who's leading.
Okay, your turn.
All right, my turn. Let's do it.
All righty. Gotta watch where we're going. Hands up.
And off they go. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Barras in Fairbanks, Zachariah Hughes and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, and Casey Kelly and Lisa Fu in Juneau. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the 2015 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com.
And by
Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. The Federal Subsistence Board meeting is Wednesday, January 21st through Friday, January 23rd, 2015 at the Dena'ina Civic and Convention Center in Anchorage. There will be opportunities for the public to testify on both agenda and non-agenda items. Any public comments that relate to specific fisheries proposals will be allowed. Information at 800-478-1456 or at subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.